I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing his column at Real Clear Politics, introducing us to the Commission on Unalienable Rights. It's a page on the Department of State. You can enjoy it. It's an archived content, so everything is transparent. Peter was at State during the creation of the Commission on Unalienable Rights. It's extremely useful to debate this matter now because the new administration is looking for ways to say that the UN is not acceptable, the Commission on Human Rights is not acceptable at the UN, the behavior of UNRWA is not acceptable at the UN. So, Peter, a very good evening to you. What was the original mission, as you put it together at the State Department, of the Commission on Unalienable Rights? Good evening.
Good evening, John. Well, this was, of course, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's idea, and he launched the commission in 2019, summer of 2019. I was the head of the policy plan staff, so I was made executive secretary. The chair of the committee was the great Marianne Glendon from Harvard Law School. And the idea was simple. The idea was to restate or reground America's undoubted commitment to human rights in America's founding principles, in the best in America's constitutional traditions, and the obligations we took on in 1948 when we voted to approve the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in the UN General Assembly. The commission, the need for the commission arose from what Pompeo regarded, rightly I believe, is the perversion of the great post-World War II human rights project, specifically its hijacking by progressive intellectuals and diplomats.
At the United Nations, it would not have blossomed, the Commission on Human Rights, without the support of the General Assembly at the United Nations. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Is that accurate?
That is accurate. This this document was approved by nations from around the world in 1948. It was a momentous document. It was the first time in human history that peoples and nations from around the world agreed on, this is important, a small set of basic principles, rights that no decent state would invade, obligations that all decent states would seek to meet. In that respect, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is similar in many respects to the American Declaration of Independence. But since 1948, especially over the last 30 years, new understandings of rights have taken hold, and the original vision, austere as it was, focusing on really basic rights and fundamental freedoms, has been transformed into a license to use international organizations and the U.S. State Department to promote abroad a progressive political agenda.
Peter, because you write often about the philosophy of education, I'm interested to understand the quick version of how the really good idea in the 1940s became a tool for the progressive left on campuses to wield for power, for money, and for rejecting anyone else's interpretation. How did that happen? Was it on purpose? Was it an accident?
Probably a little of both. There are a number of reasons, but since you asked me to be quick, I'll focus on just one point. Somehow it was discerned, whether it was deliberate or the dominant faculty stumbled upon it. The following was, in effect, observed: that it's great when you can say that a political preference of yours is objective, universal, and necessary. That's what a right is. Right is something, a human right is something that's universal, objective, and necessary. Your rights may be dishonored here or there, but something that inheres in all human beings is dishonored. So a campaign was undertaken within the universities, in effect, to transform a variety of political preferences from starting with actually abortion into a human right. That is not something that a reasonable person might support and try to win the backing of in a democracy, but a good that was ought to be universally available because it was objectively necessary from the moral point of view. So that was the trick: transform a political preference into a right. Once you've done that, there's no debating it because a right is universal, objective, and necessary.
Is there a fault in the conservatives for not pushing back, for walking away in despair?
I think there is, because on reflection, and I have to say, Mike Pompeo understood this deeply, that conservatives can't simply repudiate rights, because as conservatives, we seek to conserve the best in our traditions. And rights that are inherent in human beings, lie at the very foundation of the American political tradition. Unalienable rights are what the Declaration of Independence says legitimate governments are based upon, and it's the task of legitimate governments, just governments, to protect our unalienable rights, to translate those unalienable rights into forms of government like the Constitution, which are organized so as to protect our unalienable rights. So actually rights, universal rights, are really ought to be at the core of what conservatives think about. I just have to add a very quick caveat. That doesn't mean that the U.S. Constitution gives Americans carte blanche to roam the world imposing rights on other people. What that American commitment means that our system is dedicated to rights, and we hold our system to it.
UNRWA, part of the creation of the United Nations, looking to aid people who are in despair, especially in the Middle East. What we now know is that UNRWA was transformed into a weapon of war in the hands of the worst killers in the Middle East, Hamas and Hezbollah. Transformed into it purposefully. It was not a secret. You could see it, but there was no intervention. Is that okay with the left, that UNRWA was perverted and it's none of their affair, and that pressing this matter of rights ignores the people who were under the grip of UNRWA and its Hamas brethren? Did they sign off on that, Peter?
Well, they certainly signed off on that, but I think in many cases they deluded themselves about UNRWA. Now, that's culpable delusion, because the evidence has been massive, has been publicly available for some time, that UNRWA does not serve the Palestinian people. It serves Hamas, or it only serves those that set of Palestinians, I have to say, not a small set, that is sympathetic to Hamas. That means committing jihad against Israel. In any case, UNRWA, which is supposed to be there to attend to the social and economic needs of the Palestinian people, understands itself, in fact, is advancing Palestinian ambition to take Israel away from the Jewish people, to engage in armed assault on Israel. So no, I do not see UNRWA as serving human rights. I believe the human rights of the Palestinians deserve to be served. UNRWA has proven it can't do it.
In other words, what happened is they politicized UNRWA. And you're warning that the politicization of all human rights has been the success of the left, the progressive left, at the United Nations in many academies. And the right stood down from that, saying, it's not about politics, it's about human rights. Is that an argument that's happening now, Peter? Is there any change in the weather?
Well, first of all, that's an excellent summary of what I am saying. So thank you for that. Is there a change in the weather? Well, we're going to see from the Rubio State Department. As senator, Marco Rubio had a very impressive record of combining a realistic understanding of the world with an awareness that America stands for human rights and should do what is within its power, which is limited, to champion human rights around the world. Even as the Rubio State Department has enjoyed a number of wins over the last few days, it still strikes me as it is early in Marco Rubio's tenure as Secretary of State, and the story of his priorities is one still that's unfolding. I'm optimistic that a Secretary of State Rubio will find a way consistent with his political convictions, consistent with the Trump administration, to align U.S. foreign policy with the championship, with the championing of human rights.
The Blinken State Department shut down the commission or continued it?
Well, the commission had been shut down, but Blinken formally repudiated the report of the commission. And in doing so, he cast aside the great diplomatic breakthrough we had with the world's largest Muslim organization.
Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing his column at Real Clear Politics, the Commission on Unalienable Rights, Once Upon a Time.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.